From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, Dogs win it!
From the Athens Banner-Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome into the Bulldogs Extra Podcast. Mark and Ryan here with you. Happy Thursday, everyone. If you're listening on the day we record, it's the Valentine's Day week. Ryan, I know you had a big Valentine's Day, but we're not going to touch on that. We're going to have a new offensive coordinator at Georgia, and we're going to touch on that a lot. Todd Monken is now gone to the Baltimore Ravens. Mike Bobo elevated up from the support staff to offensive coordinator. We will talk about that, and we're going to do a little thing where we're going to rank the coordinators at Georgia since the Mark Richt era. See kind of where we think some of these coordinators through the years might rank. See where you got Bobo and Monken. And we're going to have a special guest, former Georgia kicker Jack Podlesny, to talk about his time at Georgia, the two national titles he won, and his preparation for a pro career. But as I mentioned, Ryan, our long national nightmare is over. And we don't have to wait any longer to find out what's going on with Todd Monken. Are you excited about that?
I thought you meant that Valentine's had come and gone when you said our nightmare was over. But, yeah, I mean, everybody kind of saw it coming, right? And the whole process, the way it played out, I don't think anybody's too surprised that Mike Bobo is once again the offensive coordinator at Georgia. And, big loss. Todd Monken going to the NFL. The big question outside of Georgia land is, will he have – quarterback. Shoot, who's the Ravens quarterback? Why is his name slipping me? Lamar Jackson. As his quarterback, or will he be in Atlanta? That's the big question.
All right. We're not talking about that on this podcast. I have no clue. I mean, I guess I have seen the Falcons link to him, but this is a Georgia podcast.
I know.
For the Ravens podcast, not sure where you need to go. Jason Lockenfora does a Baltimore radio show. Maybe go there. A friend of the podcast, Jason Butt, is used to cover the Ravens. Maybe he has some insight on that.
There you go.
Ron, here's what I think of this. First of all, it was interesting. John Harbaugh, right? It's John Harbaugh. He put out, or the Ravens put out, I can't remember which one, something like 15 different candidates interviewed. And there were 22 different interviews, so some of them did multiple interviews. I mean, the amount of teams, you see all the NFL teams, you know, the Buccaneers were doing interviews, and, it's all out in the open in terms of the numbers and even the names. It would be interesting if the colleges had to do that. I guess they can't, because if a guy's interviewing, like, the Southern Miss OC is interviewing to, like, become the Vanderbilt OC and he doesn't get it, like, how does that hurt recruiting? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Right.
In any event, look, Mike Bobo was a very good coordinator at Georgia. His offense set records. He also did this with some iffy defenses under Todd Grantham at times and Willie Martinez. He spent this past year under Todd Monken as an offensive analyst. He was always right there. We didn't get into practice that much, but the times we did, he was, you know, right milling around, you know, with notes. And even on the two times in the playoffs we got into practices, they're doing the yoga stretching on the field because that's Thursday is what they end practice with. You know, Kirby could have let us in the first 15 minutes of practice, but he chose the last 15. But Bobo was, on the bench, I know, at the stadium out in L.A., just kind of sitting watching it all because, you know, I don't think he's going to get down on his on the field and do the yoga with him necessarily. But so, you know, it's interesting. I'd never asked the question to Kirby during the season, but I thought about it because, you know, you thought that Monken was not for long at Georgia. I mean, 3 years is a lot for a guy that's been in the NFL and came back to the college game. But, you know, how much prep do you do for the next guy, whether that would have been Buster Faulkner or Mike Bobo, or if you go outside? And I thought it was interesting that that Todd Monken gave credit to Mike Bobo for two the first two touchdown passes against LSU. And then Ryan Williams, who's been on the support staff for several years, was also credited for a touchdown pass against LSU that, like, these guys drew up those plays. So what's your take on this move to Mike Bobo?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Mike Bobo is a successful offensive coordinator. He proved that at Georgia. And, you know, everybody questions maybe some calls, right? The third and long draws or something like that. But when you look at a whole, you know, what he did with Aaron Murray at quarterback, I mean, they were, you know, putting up large numbers game in and game out, excuse me, every single game. And, you know, he's a bright mind. And, you know, who knows how his, I guess, offense could have evolved over these years. What did he take from Todd Monken? What are the weapons he has now that will make him, you know, continue the success? I don't think Kirby's, you know, looking at this as, hey, I just want to hire my buddy to be a coordinator. I mean, yeah, I think everything just kind of fell into place. All the pieces fell into place that, you know, where he can add guys like a Will Muschamp or a Mike Bobo to come back home and kind of have a spot. And when the opportunity arises, you know, they just jump right into that. You mentioned Buster Faulkner. I think we were discussing the other day. It's kind of funny. I mean, would he have been that guy had he not jumped to Tech? And, you know, it seemed like he was the right-hand man, kind of a genius along with Todd Monken there devising plans and all. But he's not. He went to Tech, and Mike Bobo was longtime offensive coordinator who will move right into the job. And I've always been a fan of Bobo. I think he'll do a great job. I think he's a very bright offensive mind. And I don't expect much of a drop-off, if any, from this Georgia offense.
I'm not sure I'm going to say that far. Go that far. I mean, I think there might have been a drop-off anyway as you transition from Stetson Bennett to whether it's Carson Beck, Brock Vandegrift, Gunnar Stockton. Presumably it'll be Beck, but to keep that level with a guy Stetson Bennett who had an underrated unique skill set and a lot of moxie, I think, as a quarterback, and Todd Monken is and I wrote about this. He's a tough act to follow. It may be his system that Bobo will be running, and you know, that's presumably the case given that Bobo was here and had a year to soak it up and contribute to it. But to me, this is a kind of a key factor. Play calling to a certain extent is an art. They both do it well, but Monken seemed to make the right moves in the biggest games. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Mike Bobo. You know, as you mentioned, sometimes people were on him for certain calls at certain times. You know, this will be Mike Bobo as a play caller. It won't be Todd Monken, with Kirby's influence on what Georgia's offense, you know, should.
That's the big thing, right? I mean, like with Kirby, I mean, he has his pulse on every single thing. I mean, what in the meetings, you know, will he put in? What will any of the other guys on the offense, you know, the running back side and the receiver side with McClendon, who also has coordinator experience. You know, I wonder how much input they'll also have in keeping the success up from what Monken did.
You mentioned Buster Faulkner, who I presume, you know, I don't know if he would have gotten the job over Bobo if he still was here. I mean, Bobo has a lot more experience as a play caller and offensive coordinator at major programs. Brian McClendon has called plays at South Carolina under Will Muschamp. Thomas Brown is another player with Georgia connections who is interviewing on the NFL level at offensive coordinator and head coaching jobs. Some of those have been filled by now, but he did that the last cycle as well. It's a good time to break in a new quarterback and a new coordinator given this week's schedule in September, which South Carolina is the only team that really is a challenge to perhaps give Georgia a game. Game five, I think it is at Auburn under Hugh Freeze in year one. I don't know. What do you make of, you know, Bobo's time at Auburn and South Carolina as offensive coordinator where, you know, scoring offense at Auburn, 62nd nationally, South Carolina, 98th, total offense, 63rd nationally and 96th. At Colorado State, the offenses there were 71st, 107th, 31st, 28th. and 22nd. I'm sorry, 62nd in scoring offense. I mean, obviously the talent level there is not what it is at Georgia, but can you just discount that? He hasn't called a game at Georgia since 2014, but he's been back in the SEC for a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, all that should be taken into consideration, I guess. I mean, but you look at, you know, some at Colorado State where the talent was so much below where what he'd have at a Georgia or, you know, same with South Carolina too. You know, just didn't have the weapons. You know, you look at Brock Bowers getting that guy the ball. How will he continue to, you know, Todd Monken was so good at that. You know, he's got to have that on his play sheet. How do we get Brock Bowers the ball more, you know? You got Ladd McConkey coming back. You know, you got all these weapons that he'll have to his disposal. He didn't have it other places. So I think it'll be interesting. I really do. But I personally am one that has faith in what Bobo has done in the past, especially at Georgia.
I will say this. He did have some weapons at Colorado State, just not
Michael Gallup. Did he have him while he was there?
Yeah, Michael Gallup was. He's a local kid, right?
Dude, I can't remember where he's from. I just know that he was killing it at Colorado State.
Yeah, he was in town in Athens. So he went to Monroe area. And Bobo tweeted out a photo of him over at the Georgia facility sometime in the last couple months. So he came to visit him. He also had the Mackey Award-winning tight end before Bowers, a guy that racked up a lot of catches, a lot of yards, only one touchdown, though, which is kind of weird.
Well, that's a la Darnell Washington, right?
I mean, Darnell had a few more, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked about, you know, kind of Bobo's resume. How much do you think, you know, having Muschamp and Bobo kind of being best buds with Kirby, coaching, you know, close coaching contacts through the years, no matter where they went, and then families, you know, our friends, that kind of thing. Do you think, you know, did that give them a leg up, obviously, to get these jobs? You know, Muschamp, not the only coordinator. I saw somebody tweet out a photo of the three of them from back in the day or something, and forgetting the fact that Glenn Schumann was not in that kind of brotherhood.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I think that's what it all goes back to, is their days in the mid-90s, you know, together. And I guess Will and Kirby kind of missed each other just a little bit. But, yeah, you said it, the history of their families being coaches and all that and kind of growing up knowing each other, I think that was 100% the reason why they have all come back to the University of Georgia to, I guess, fraternize again as coaches.
All right, let's rate Georgia coordinator hires since the Mark Richt early days, since I've been covering Georgia. I wasn't there for the 2002 championship, but offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, let's do them separately between then and now.
All right, well, I was thinking about this, right? Shouldn't we start at number one and dead last?
No, because I'm never going to forget someone. Let's just...
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, we start with one and we go down.
I got you. But I think we know who's last as well, is what I'm saying.
We'll see.
Fill in between.
Yeah, I don't want to kind of give away my list ahead of time.
All right, go for it.
All right, number one is the 2-time national championship offensive coordinator Todd Monken. That's kind of an easy one to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Top of the chart.
Number two is the guy that replaced him. That's Mike Bobo, who's been here 14 seasons at Georgia. I think it's 8 as offensive coordinator. I think the 2007 season, he called the Georgia Tech game, maybe was his first one, and then whatever the bowl game was. So I'm going to have him at number two.
So you put him ahead of Chaney?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. No, I agree. I've always thought that Mike Bobo was a great play caller. So I agree, and he had years of success. And you know, it took a lot for Mark Richt to kind of pass off the play calling duties to him, but he felt confident enough in Mike Bobo to do that. So,
speaking of Mark Richt, I'm putting him at number three because he was the play caller. He was an offensive coordinator in title. Didn't really have it, but you know, and Neil Callaway was the offensive coordinator before he left for UAB.
Oh man, name going by.
But I'm going to book Rick at number three behind Bobo.
That's a great call. That's a great call. And I might, you know, he was so good when he first got here and he was great at FSU. I might even have him one spot ahead. I might have him as ahead of Bobo.
Number four, Jim, no, I mean, Boba's the one that had to set the records. Chaney, I got at number four. And I put him ahead of Callaway, which, you know, Callaway was organizing the meetings and running the practices, but he wasn't calling the plays.
Yeah, I think I heard horror stories of him running those February. Was it Matt drills? Is that what they called those things?
That was Dave Van Hallinger, but yeah.
Well, I heard Callaway. Yeah, I guess he took it to UAB, and I had some friends there that said that it was hell.
All right, James Coley and Brian Schottenheimer in that order for to fill out the list here.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, we're gonna put Schottenheimer last. I do believe his one season was a debacle, but hey, he's still around. Who just hired him? Was it the Cowboys? Is that where he's going? What in the world?
He's
is going
the
on?
Dallas Cowboys offensive coordinator.
But Coley wasn't much better.
All right, defensive coordinators. To me, this is kind of tough when you get past the top. I have Dan Lanning number one.
Well, Kirby Smart.
Well, yeah, I mean. Kirby, I'm not including in this list because he's on top of the defense for 7 years. But, yeah, Dan Lanning, I got one. Mm-hmm. And then I went back and forth. I end up, I think, now with, I don't know. It's a hard decision to me between the Muschamp-Schumann combo, which is only 1 year, and obviously they had some tough games in the postseason before the finals, I guess. And then – to me, Jeremy Pruitt's 2 years were underrated. If you just look at his defenses and you don't take account the off-field chaos that ensued, he had top 10 defense in 2015. I can't remember.
Put him ahead of Mel Tucker in his 2 years?
Now, Mel Tucker also had very good numbers. Mm-hmm. It's a really tight race there. And then Brian Van Gorder.
Very good, yeah.
During the 14 season, 2004 season, they were eighth in total defense, ninth in scoring defense, and he was – he won the Frank Broyles Award in 2003. So that's when his defense was third nationally and scoring fourth in total. You know what? I'm going to put Van Gorder up ahead of. I'm going to put him. He might be number two. He's probably. Three.
Yeah, I definitely considered him as. I mean, those were some good defense. Now he has some players, didn't he? You know, you think about Tom Davis, well, Greg Blue.
The problem with Van Gorder is that his career kind of spiraled away from Georgia. So
went to Georgia Southern and downhill from there. Yep.
Notre Dame, Louisville, Auburn, et cetera. And Willie Martinez, look, he was the coordinator in the 05 National SEC Championship season, but numbers – wait a second, I forgot Todd Grantham. Todd Grantham is ahead of Willie Martinez, I think. Maybe it's a tie.
I think he's ahead. I mean, Willie was not very good.
Nice guy, though. Nice guy. All right, let's bring on our guest, Jack Podlesny.
Thanks for listening to the Bulldogs Extra Podcast. Like what you hear? Subscribe today wherever you get your podcast. Give us a rating, a like, and even leave us a comment to let us know how we're doing. As always, find more content at onlineathens.com and in the Athens Banner Herald. Now, let's get back to the show.
All right. Welcome now our special guest, two-time national championship kicker Jack Podlesny, all SEC first team selection, who's now moving on, getting ready for the NFL. And Jack, appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So let's catch up. First of all, what has been going on in your world since the national title in Los Angeles? Take me back to kind of getting back and then transitioning from a college player to a budding NFL prospect.
You know, I kind of hit the ground running. I flew out the next morning out of L.A. at 7:30 in the morning to Orlando for the Hula Bowl. And so I was there for the remainder of that week. And then I think I came back to Athens for maybe a week or so and tried to regroup myself as much as I could. But didn't get much regrouping because then I had to go and train with my kicking coach after that, who's in Columbia, South Carolina. And then I think next thing for me was the Senior Bowl. And so it's been all in one. There hasn't really been much downtime for me, and there's been not as much rest as I'd like, but I'm finding the times where I can get it. But it's a great experience overall. You know, it comes with its ups, it comes with its downs, but I wouldn't trade it for anything else in the world.
Now, Jack, did you do anything for the Super Bowl? I mean, do you still do you communicate with like Jordan Davis or N'Kobe or anything since they were playing in it? Do you ever get to talk?
I still talk to him a little bit. I talk to Jordan probably more frequently than I do N'Kobe. I'm an Eagles fan at heart, so that was a tough night for me. I didn't do much for it. I just sat at the house, had some good food, and just enjoyed the game. I think if it was another team that, you know, wasn't my team, I probably would have had a little bit more fun, but that wasn't the case.
Good food. What was on the menu?
We had some gumbo, actually. Oh, man. Gumbo was like the main meal, and then we just had some snacks, some dips beforehand. So pretty
homemade,
good.
Homemade gumbo? You
homemade gumbo. Yes, sir.
Man, nice.
You, I knew you took part in the Senior Bowl. I guess I might have gone under the radar that you also did the Hula Bowl. What was the experience like in those weeks? And, you know, which coaches did you work most with, and your interaction with the teams when you weren't on the practice field?
Yeah, so the Hula Bowl and Senior Bowl were a bit different. The Hula Bowl was more of they didn't use current coaches, so they used past NFL players, past NFL coaches. And Senior Bowl was a bit different. So they brought in – this was the first year that they did it. They brought in staffs from different teams that didn't make the playoffs. So in years past, they had brought in one coaching staff. So I think last year was the Jets and the Lions. Well, this year it was – the Commanders, the Bears, the Jets, the Lions, like you name it, there were different teams there. And so I had the pleasure of working with the assistant special teams coach from the Commanders, Ben Jacobs. And so he got to pour in me, and I got to experience, you know, what he has learned overall coaching in the NFL, playing in the NFL. And so that was just a great experience.
Jack, obviously your career, I mean – What can you say about it? I mean, you follow, you know, obviously, you know, Hot Rod and his legendary status. Then you go through COVID, and then you kick the field goal, you know, in the Peach Bowl the first time around there. And, you know, what an experience, right? I mean, it had to be one of the more surreal and odd college experiences that you could have.
Most definitely. You know, I'd like to think that I was kind of just thrown into the fire, you know, originally, just right then and there. But it was a fun 2 years, freshman and sophomore year, learning from Rod, also learning from Camarda, you know, cause Camarda came in and started right away. So that was a great experience to see how a kid comes in as a freshman and can win the job right away and what his mindset's like. So that kind of, you know, that built me for the 3 years that I started that, you know, I got to learn from them and train my mind, train my body to compete at this collegiate level, but I mean this elite collegiate level. It's not just like, you know, we're playing in any other organization. We're playing at the best college football team in the nation. So it was a surreal experience.
Have you talked to Rodrigo or Jake about their experience you know, during this pre-draft process, and any tidbits you picked up from them that you think might help you between now and April?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, as you guys have seen throughout their careers, Jake and Rod are very different people when it comes to football and when it comes to life. And so each has something different to speak on. I'd say that my path right now is somewhat similar to Jake's. So I've been talking to him quite frequently, actually. I mean, we might talk even like once a day. Like we definitely talk at least 5 times a week. And so I'm getting to experience some of the things that I saw him going through last year. And I think the number one thing that sticks out from both of them is to make sure whenever you do have this downtime to rest your mind, to rest your body, to rest your heart, because there isn't much time for that once you get to the NFL. I mean, I know college is pretty tough, but that next level, you know, there's no doubt about it that there's not much off time.
When you look back, what's the kick that stands out? What's the one that, you know, you think, you know, you dream about? It wakes you up in the middle of the night and you're like, oh, yes, that was my moment.
I mean, it'd be cliche for me to say 2020 Peach Bowl, right?
Right.
So I'm not going to say that one just because that's what everyone else would expect me to say. I don't know if I like to define it's my kicks as much as a game, because, you know, there's overall, hopefully I get multiple kicks in a game. Right. I'd say it's the national championship, in 2021. It's that, you know, that two kicks where I'm the one that kind of keeps us in the game instead of going into the locker room down 9-0. We're only down 9-6 at half, knowing that, you know, I'm an offensive weapon when need to be, and I get to keep our team in the game when called upon.
You mentioned games. What did that Tennessee game this year, you know, from the field there, you know, everybody talks about what the crowd was like, and it might have been the loudest Sanford Stadium's been maybe ever. But what was that like from a player's perspective inside that arena?
I didn't know what to expect. We had what, Kentucky and Arkansas at home last year. That were probably our two biggest games at home. And they kind of packed out the stadium. And, you know, they always said the Arkansas game was so loud. And so going into this one, I was just like, you know, it's probably going to be the same, like not much different. And then when it hit me was when it started just downpouring in the middle of the game. And there wasn't a single fan who left.
Right.
Everyone just embraced it. And honestly, it got louder. Like that was probably my favorite part of the game, was just seeing everyone get into it so much, no matter the conditions.
Jack, of course, you stepped in for Rodrigo, a guy that had a very accomplished career, and now someone's going to be doing the same, competing for the job that you held. What do you think of the guys that are kind of waiting in the wings, from your knowledge of them? Can you give us some insight on some of the top candidates to become the next Georgia kicker?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that there's great candidates coming up. You know, you've got Jared Zirkel, who's staying, which we saw that he posted on Instagram a couple days ago, because I know he's graduating this spring. And so he had the option, you know, to whether he'd leave or not. And then there's Peyton Woodring coming in. And I think we've got a walk-on coming in as well, Will Hadaway. You know, competition breeds success, in my opinion. That 2020 COVID year going into the season, that's, I honestly think, what made me who I am today. You know, there were four options at kicker, including Jake Camarda, and they didn't care who you were. They were going to put the best guy on the field. And so knowing that that's in the same coach's hands and a better staff, you know, I think that they'll make the right decision. But I know that it's, at the end of the day, it's going to be a competition. You know, it's not just going to be handed out.
Well, can you tell me a little bit about Jared, just a guy that you saw in practice, for, you know, all the,
yeah, books? No, Zerk, which we all call him, like, it's funny hearing Jared. he's a great dude. He's got a good leg too. You know, he's consistent. He can put up from anywhere, and he kind of stays his course, you know, keeps his head down, keeps moving. And at the end of the day, he just wants to kick a football. That's what we all want to do. Right. And so, you know, that's what he tries to do, and that's what, he'll keep doing.
Obviously, Jack, there was the tragedy a couple weeks ago. You know, when you lose people like that are so close to you, how hard did that hit you and the rest of the team?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. You know, I remember telling Anthony Dasher, he was down at the Senior Bowl. Growing up, you know, it's kind of related. My mom always would tell me, you know, everything happens for a reason. There's nothing that happens that it's not meant to be. And so normally at the Senior Bowl, the specialists get roomed with a quarterback. And so I was expecting, you know, maybe to go in there and room with like Max Duggan or something. But I end up rooming with Warren McClendon. And to me, that happened for a reason. You know, God made that happen, whether it was for me just to be there for him, to talk with him about it. But speaking on Devin and Chandler, you know, they were the light in the room. They were the one that walked in with the biggest smile on their face. There's never a bad day. And I remember after the national championship, Dev being like one of the first ones coming up to me, giving me a big old hug, saying, "I love you, Pod," no matter what. And so just to think about that, you know, is so heartbreaking, but at the same time, knowing that they left this earth a better place.
Was Warren holding up pretty well during the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I think time does people well. And I think that's what's helped so far, is just that, you know, it's just progressing a day at a time. It's not, you can't take it a couple weeks at a time. It's day by day.
Part of transition from that topic to another, but let me ask you about something in the news this week. Obviously, changing coordinators on the offensive side, and I want to just ask you, you know, being at practice with Mike Bobo for the last year, I guess, starting in the spring, seeing him work behind the scenes. What did you learn about him in terms of your interaction? And I know kickers kind of do their own thing, but, you know, how much you think he might have soaked up from being around Todd Monken this past year?
I mean, I think he soaked up a lot. I'm sure that, you know, I think, I mean, I give it all to Todd Monken, you know, for all the play calling, but I'm sure that there's some that Todd Monken probably soaked up from Bobo too, you know?
Sure.
But just to speak on Bobo, you know, a little bit as a coach, but more of a person, Bobo is always the coach. You know, there's a lot of coaches that you walk by in the facility and they're just like, hey, Bobo's the guy who's like, what's up, Pod? How's it going? You know, he's the one that pours into players. He would always, our specialist room, you know, is kind of detached from everyone. Just, you know, it's how the specialists roll. But every time after team meeting, he would always stop by and poke his head in and say hello to us. So knowing that and knowing the kind of person he is, I mean, I think we've got a great future ahead of us because I know that he'll pour into our offensive players, but not only them, our defensive players, our specialists. And that's what you want a coach to do. And so, I'm very happy that, you know, Bobo gets this opportunity.
Ranking your holders, where does Stetson fall in there?
Well, saying that I've only had Jake Camarda and Stetson hold, I'm going to put Stetson at number two and Jake at number one.
Wow, I didn't know you were going to press him on that, Ryan.
Hey, is there a unique holding ability that Jake did better than Stetson? Or?
Yeah, you know, it just, you know, it comes with reps, and that's you know, that's the difference. Stetson's over there doing 7-on-7, 9-on-9, red zone drills, and Jake's over there with the specialists. You know, we're twiddling our thumbs and have nothing better to do, so why not hold some footballs?
All right, last thing, Jack, before we let you go. I saw NFL Draft Countdown had kicker rankings, and it had you third behind Jake Moody of Michigan and Chad Ryland of Maryland. And I know you're going to the NFL Combine at the end of this month. You know, what do you make of kind of trying to get yourself in best position to help an NFL team?
Yeah, so for me, that's, you know, it's a competition, me versus me. You know, it's not anything I can prove to go out and compete against someone else. I mean, at the end of the day, you are, right? But how are you improving? You're improving by getting better yourself. It's not by, you know, making, like, hoping that other person misses his kick. If you're hoping that other person misses his kick, then you're in the wrong spot. And so, like, I just want to go out there and impress one team. You know, that's another insight that I've gotten from Camarda and Rodrigo, is it only takes one coach, right? It doesn't take all 32. You just need one coach to take an opportunity on you. And so whatever coach that may be, you know, whether it may be they like how I kick off, they like how I kick field goals, or even, you know, the interview process of, you know, this guy's a good kicker, but he's an even better person. So just making that lasting impression on one of these coaches will go a far way from me. And I'm hoping to do so at the Combine.
Jack, we appreciate you joining us, and good luck at the NFL Combine. And I know, I guess you'll probably come back for G-Day, because I think last year those guys came back to get their championship rings. I don't know if they're going to have them ready for you or not, your second rings. So
that's the word. I think they will. So,
well, best of luck, and good talking to you. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, we thank Jack Podlesny for joining us to talk Georgia football and his career and his NFL pursuit. Ryan, since we last podcast, the SEC's 14-16 team move is going to happen faster. It's in 2024 now instead of 2025. Texas and Oklahoma will be in the SEC. You know, I never thought it would be 2025, even though that's what it was announced. Like, I always wrote when I wrote about Texas and Oklahoma that 2025 at the latest, because 4 years is a long time after an announcement to have
a lot of money on the table between those 2 years too.
Well, yeah, but they have to pay exit fees to get out of the Big 12. So, you know,
it's talking about the SEC at the whole.
Yeah. But I just think everybody wants to move on. The Big 12 does not want to have Texas and Oklahoma representing them for two more seasons.
And that's the expansion, right? 2024 to the playoffs.
Yeah. So I think Texas A&M is going to stay on Georgia's 2024 schedule. When Georgia hasn't gone to Texas A&M, that is well known, and it's kind of like a – I wouldn't say it's a black eye, but the SEC wants Georgia to go play at Texas A&M. I don't think that's stopping. I think they're going to be on there. When the new schedule comes out for 2024, I think that's going to happen. Or let me put it this way. I'd be surprised if it doesn't. But if it is a nine-game SEC schedule in 2024, which seems to be the leader in the clubhouse – who do you want? Florida, Auburn, and who's the third?
I've always thought Tennessee. I mean, to me, and maybe it's me growing up in the 90s, right? It seemed that Tennessee and Florida were the two biggest rivals. And, you know, whenever those games were played, and I know Georgia got the, you know, bad end of the stick there many times, especially against, say, Peyton and the like. But it just seemed to me like Tennessee, Florida are your first two rivals as a Georgia fan. And then, yeah, I think Auburn going back to the Deep South's oldest rivalry is your third. So that would be my three picks.
Here's the thing, though, is that, you know, and I don't know exactly how the format's going to work out, but, you know, Tennessee, Alabama are going to be playing as rivals because that's like a famous, what is it, third Saturday in October type deal?
Yeah.
Like,
but I mean, are you going to have Tennessee and Vandy as big rivals?
Yes, that is that's a rival too. Yeah, I mean, as much just because they're in the same state. But my point is that, like, I can't imagine Tennessee wants to face Alabama and Georgia every year again. Like, right. They have had to do that, but I don't know. I think South Carolina and Kentucky will draw some consideration.
But wouldn't you think Auburn had that same complaint, right?
Yeah, they will. But I mean, that's a natural rivalry, Tennessee. And Georgia, while it's a rivalry, I mean, they didn't play for a good bit before Herschel, right? I mean, like, it hadn't been a constant, or after Herschel, maybe. I need to pull up the thing, but like.
Well, I mean, where is South Carolina on that list? I've never considered South Carolina to be the biggest rival.
I don't either. So who knows? We'll see how it plays out. And, you know, I'm sure Kirby won't. He'll be asked about it sometime in the spring. I don't think he's gonna offer any. The only thing he would want would be Florida in Georgia, you know, in terms of moving out of Jacksonville. So we'll see. Georgia basketball, a couple wins since our last podcast. They beat Kentucky at home. Nice win there. And then they pull out a win as Justin Hill drives the court and throws up a high shot off the glass.
Justin Hill has impressed me the past few weeks, having to fill in for Terry Roberts there for a bit. I mean, he's done a great job.
Yeah, Terry Roberts has been off his game, or at least the last game in particular. But Georgia goes to an Alabama team that just lost last night, number one Alabama.
Not good.
They lost to Tennessee, and they got to get them on their home floor. So, you know, not an easy task for Georgia. And they've had some blowout losses in their last few road games. But Georgia is at 6-7. They got to go to Alabama. They go, in terms of the SEC, they go to Alabama, and they go to Arkansas. Arkansas 6-7, tied with Georgia.
They lost at A&M last night, if I'm not mistaken.
Was it? Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think if Georgia pull out another two wins or so in SEC, I mean, I think this is already a successful season under Mike White, and a couple more wins, I think it'd be extremely successful.
Georgia 16-10 overall. Now, the interesting thing to me is that, you know, we had predicted their record. And might have to revisit some. Now, I think those road games are going to be tough. But Florida lost Colin Castleton last night to a broken hand.
Ah, man.
And he's their best player.
They killed Georgia last time they played down there.
So that changes the dynamic of that Florida game at home. And then absolutely, Missouri just got their butts kicked on Tuesday night. So we'll see. Then they got South Carolina as well. So maybe Georgia – maybe they can do a little bit better in their finish than we thought. Now, these next two games are going to be tough. Yeah, I mean, and it's hard to say that this has not been a successful season for Mike White. And the other thing to me that I think gets overlooked is they didn't have a bad loss at home in the non-conference, and there were a bunch of those last year, you know, against teams that were bye games. Mm-hmm. Georgia baseball opens its season this weekend against Jacksonville State. And it's year 10 for Scott Strickland as coach. I've got a story up on Online Athens, talked to Strickland and some players and athletic director Josh Brooks, kind of about, can Georgia take it the next step? Can they get to a super regional? It hasn't happened yet under Scott Strickland. It happened three times under David Perno, three trips to the College World Series, but then Perno had two seasons where the bottom kind of fell out in SEC play, and they missed the tournament in three of his last 4 years. Scott Strickland's been consistent. They've made the tournament three of the last 4 years, but they haven't been able to get out of the regionals.
Yeah.
What do you think of Georgia baseball? What's the state of that program?
Yeah, he needs a good season, I think. I mean, obviously, we talked about how COVID kind of really, really hit the program because they had a pretty solid pitching rotation there with a couple of big-time guys. But, yeah, I think he needs to get it back on track a little bit. And, and it'd be huge if he could get past the regionals, getting the super regionals, because, like you said, he hadn't done that. Also, I think softball started last weekend with a bang. They had a couple big
wins. They're up to number eight maybe in the country in one of the polls. But getting back to Georgia Baseball Corp for a quick second, it's their lineup 1 through 9 that they are kind of talking about as the best they've had in a while.
Okay.
So a little bit more pop. They get back the kid from Oconee County.
Connor Tate, I believe.
Yeah, brother is going into the Minnesota Twins organization. Get it? Twins.
I remember them being freshmen at Oconee County High School. Mm.
What that means is that Ryan Dennis is getting old.
That does mean that.
So we'll see what happens to Georgia. They're like in 39th, 42nd, or something like that in the polls in the preseason. So if they could get past the NCAA regionals, that would be overachieving. We'll see what happens with this team. Anyway, everyone, we're getting closer and closer to spring practice. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next time.
Take care.